Wow. Oh, Bert. Welcome. Saturday night, Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show. That was a great show last night, the live one. Wow, we like that a lot. We had on a great caver last night, all about caves. Caves are incredibly important. You know, I've been climbing around in those puppies, but they have a big effect on our water supply and our all kinds of fertilizers and antiquity of America and outlaws hid in them. Tonight we're going to have a two-part segment. One is the National Health Federation that I used to lecture with. There'll be some interesting stuff there, and then we're going to have a metaphysical tape come on. So, and next week's guest we haven't really determined yet, but because I've been trying to reach some very important people, and we got David Icke coming up on the 16th or so. So anyway, let's start with Dr. Fred Bell here and see what this boy is up to tonight.
Yes, sir. Let's do it. Oh, yeah. I'm waiting. Dr. Bell, are you there? I want
to
be introduced.
I'd like to introduce me. Right now, yes, yes. He has a very important subject for you, and I know you're going to enjoy it. Dr. Fred Bell is from Ann Arbor, Michigan, originally. He's a year older than I am, I notice, so we won't give the date he was born. he has conducted research and experiments since he was 7 years old. And I've always wanted to meet some child protégés, and Dr. Bell is one of the first ones I've been privileged to meet. At 15, he worked with the University of Michigan on a government-sponsored atomic energy program. Notice his glow. Dr. Bell served in the U.S. Air Force and later worked with Rockwell Corporation and NASA on the Apollo and Saturn moon projects. During this time, he had the privilege of working with Dr. Wernher von Braun. He left the aerospace industry and for a time continued his education and studies with Himalayan masters. He has since returned to the holistic health movement. I know you're going to enjoy Dr. Bell, and I won't take any more of your time, and I'll turn the podium over to this wonderful person. Thank you.
Well, it's fun to be back again at NHF. Now, before we get mental, I found it's very important to get physical, right? So why doesn't everybody just stand up for a second, right? Put your arms straight up like this. Okay. Turn to the right. Give everybody a little massage on the shoulders. Get the energy going here. Okay. That's called the NHF massage. And turn around. Put your arms up, go to the other side, give everybody on the other side a massage. Okay, does that feel better? Look how the aura feel of the room has changed. All right. Now, this is an unusual experience for me, what I'm doing today. And being an author myself, my book is called Death of Ignorance. Bailey Morales wrote the foreword in it. I'm critiquing another author's book to a degree because the NHF has voiced a certain concern about the drugs that are being used today under the auspices of recreational drugs. So, the book is called Life Extension. Now, it's interesting that Dirk Pearson and Sandy Shaw are doing some research right now, and they're real enthusiastic about it. And it's also an interesting point that we were all born in 1943, so we're the same age. These kids came out of back east, some Ivy League colleges, and so did I, University of Michigan. And I've been through this. I've tried this stuff in here. And in fact, I think I started before Dirk did. And I'm honestly able to say I'm off this stuff today, but I've been on it, so I'm not speaking from a theoretical standpoint. I'm speaking from a point of experience. Now, a couple of things that are interesting little philosophies, a couple little sayings that I found about life and wisdom is, I'll just run a few sayings by you real fast. The real secret of life extension is to give life to another. Okay? The way to get well is to help someone who is sick. If you are in pain, accept it as a lesson. For tomorrow, when it is gone, its absence will be of value. Values form a platform on which to build a foundation. The foundation is a cornerstone which can hold a home. A home is for the family where no one is alone. And heaven is a lonely place if you're the only one in it. Okay? Now, I think you can read between the lines on what those phrases mean. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to bounce through the book, and I'm going to bounce out of the book, and I'm going to make some comments on it, because the book is hot and cold. There's some very good things in this book. There's some very good first aid instructions in here. There's a wealth of information in here on where to go and access for further information. I mean, a lot of people today, if they knew where to get information about themselves, what libraries, what journalisms and books to read, it's all in here. There's a tremendous section in here on safety. The book is very well put together. There's a tremendous section on pollution in here that's also quite good. Now, in chapter one, it starts off about the psychology of life extension, commentary on patients, and immortality. It's interesting. Now, when you start talking about immortality is, first of all, it's a feeling. And I don't care what drug you take, you don't get going with the feeling of immortality until you feel it. Okay? Now, society has a tendency to program us into ignorance. People like to project their ignorance on others to feed paranoia, and paranoia is what governmental institutions are built upon. So our hierarchy has been built out of paranoia for centuries on this planet. But there is one particular being in the world that possesses the secret of immortality that is stepped on, misguided, and misused, and abused in every way, shape, or form, typically somewhere in their life experience. Yet this being not only is a perfect judge of our characters without ever knowing us, but maybe one encounter, is still overlooked. Who am I talking about? Talking about a physical person. God is in all of us. Who am I talking about? Who has the feeling of immortality? Who should you consult to become immortalized? To teach your body good feelings, proper nutrition. Who do you see? Well, there's about four or five of these types of people in here today. They're small. We overlook them. The little mountain becomes a great mountain. The little pebble, children, exactly. The feeling is in the children, the very beginning. Chapter 3 goes into your own lifespan. We are responsible for how we behave. We owe it to ourselves to look out for ourselves. Even when you're helping another, I've seen so many holistic physicians try to help other people and not take care of themselves first. They get trapped in other people's worries, other people's concerns, and then you're of no value to someone else, let alone yourself or your family. So begin inside, internally. Now, one of the things that goes into next is on page 24. It encourages high cholesterol foods. You don't have to stop eating lots of butter, whole milk, eggs, and meat. Just take vitamin E, C, and niacin, and a large amount of antioxidants. Well, there's a caution here. Antioxidants are great because a lot of these high-fat foods do produce free radicals. But you've got to be careful because our body is subject to an evolution. There's a point in the time of our bodies when we need a dairy product, the mother's milk of the cow, things like that. But we evolve beyond that. We go from a yang diet to a yin diet, and then we balance accordingly. And nutrition is very important to balance this because, for example, today, vitamin E, the same meal that we would have today has 50 times less the amount of vitamin E that it would have had 50 years ago because of food processing. Okay? Now, at this point, I want to make a comment on desire, because you have to overcome desire before you can reach the aspiration level in consciousness and evolve. How many of you are familiar with this report right here, the Global 2000 report? This was published by the federal government. It's a doomsday report. How many of you the other day saw on the front page of the Santa Ana Register a lady with a mask over her face like a handkerchief and having trouble breathing? Today, our environment is causing a degradation of everything that we do, say, hear. We've got to become aware of the environmental causes and stresses on our body, because people are trying to cover up the feelings of bad environmental poisons. There's 2 million chemicals that we're playing with today, over 2,000 in the air in any given city at any given point in time. And so everybody's going to drugs, recreational is the guise for the word drugs, to cover up the symptoms of what's really happening. Now, to exploit upon that, the federal government says that by the year 2050, there won't be too many of us around unless we start taking care of ourselves. By the year 2000, if we're going at the rate we are right now without making any changes, we will have extincted 2 million species of animals and plants and vegetation. The report further states that we have already extincted 500,000 species of plants and vegetables on this planet. There are 24 major species of vegetation that supports human life: barley, wheat, rye, oats. These are endangered because of the chemicals, the insecticides, the pesticides that have been put on the soils. What does that do for the bugs that threaten these crops? It makes them genetically mutate and become more powerful. The report further states that the natural predators are being destroyed by the herbicides and pesticides that would normally attack the bugs that are genetically mutating and becoming all-powerful and all-consuming. Okay? So maybe there is a... How many saw the movie on TV, the spider? The spider's crawling around, you know? There is some madness in some of that science fiction. There's some truth in it. It's called the Global 2000 Report. You get it from the government printing office bookstore in downtown Los Angeles. Acid rain is in here. Well, yeah, I have acid fog, right? Acid rain, pH of 1.9 the other night in Newport Beach. You know what that does when you breathe? Try it sometime. Remember, your feelings are very important. What is better than a good feeling? And people overlook the first source of feelings, the air supply. Now, further on in page 40, it states that aging uses up brain neural chemicals. This can partially be restored by drugs and vitamins. This is true because, once again, it's societal stress. We do run out of neurochemicals in the brain. We do get sluggish. The book suggests choline, acetylcholine, inositol, B3, B1, and folic acid. Nutrient-wise, I would 100% endorse those nutrients, because time and time again, insomnia is a general condition that results as a shortage of these. But it also talks about hydrogen. The book suggests hydrogen. Now, we're going to get into hydrogen because it's the number 5 most widely prescribed drug in the world outside the United States right now. But we'll get into that in a little bit. I would say, personally, from my experience, that we should check out, besides the vitamins, which these are not mentioned in the book, herbs like Don Quai, Fo Tai, Ginseng. Herbs are very important in our diets. A lot of drugs, medicinal drugs, come from herbs. Whole, complete hormone structures, for example, are found in herbs. But when science goes in and takes the herb apart, it's no longer a natural food. It immediately begins to die. It's like if you cut your finger off and you put it up here on a platform, it may wiggle from a neurological standpoint for a few minutes or from a muscular standpoint, but then it stops. Like some of this raw fish that you buy in the Japanese store. There's just a nervous reaction in there, but the life force is rapidly going back into the earth and the universe. People often overlook herbs. I personally love ginseng. Ginseng is a very natural, very powerful way to develop mental acuity. I've been using herbs, natural herbs, now for over 10 years, and I've had tremendous results with them. I know some of you have seen the pyramid that I wear occasionally. Well, I've been wearing that for 7 years. That's been tremendously helpful because of the way it works on the cilia in the lungs. Because when you breathe air, we're after a thing called a vitality globule, which is part of a negative ion charge, and we're rapidly depleting that today. Now, the next thing is a commentary on natural drugs versus synthetic drugs. I mean, vitamins, rather. Synthetic vitamins versus natural vitamins. And the book takes a standpoint, and this is a lot of the establishment. This is more than the book talking. This is the establishment talking. And they're saying that, hey, you know, unnatural, artificial vitamins are just as good. It cites an instance of vitamin C. It says synthetic vitamin C is better for your body than a natural vitamin C because there are agents and enzymes in the C that were used in the plant to bind the cell collagen and enzymes together in the plant. These are toxic to the body. That's not true. A natural vitamin has in something called a vitality globule, which I'm going to get into further. It's a natural life force. This is immediately lost in a synthetic. How many of you are aware of the fact, for example, that between the hours of 2 o'clock in the morning and 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning, we have a higher natural death rate? You familiar with that? This is because of the vitality globule, an energy that comes from the sunlight, is in its absence, is its ebb, it's ebbing away from it. The same thing is what causes the catalyst of ATP and AMP inside of a plant which your body metabolizes. If you study a laser, for example, a laser takes energy, photons of white light, converts them into green energy, and pumps out red photons, a uniformal energy. Sunlight does the same thing. It goes into a plant like a leaf, fortifies the plant, the natural sugars in the plant, green, chlorophyll. Chlorophyll is just like hemoglobin, except it has a magnesium ion rather than an iron atom in its nucleus. The chlorophyll then transforms this life-giving force into our bodies, into the cells, the nucleus of our cells, and our bodies then utilize this energy on and on and on and on and on. But man lives in total violation with nature. And man wants to cheat. He's so hung up in form that he wants to synthesize himself, his cells. And that's where the fun begins. A few years ago, the FDA, in the FDA register on 14 December 1972, said that vitamin D causes hypervitaminosis in children. This was based on a UK study in England. And the kids were coming down with rickets. And they called it infantile hypercalcemia. But what the FDA didn't realize is that vitamin D was a synthetic that they were giving these kids, and they were putting it in foods over there. As soon as they took out the vitamin D2, which is a synthetic vitamin D, and put a natural form of vitamin D in, the rickets disappeared. Vitamin D is a good example, and it's one they're going to play with. The establishment likes to play with things. Vitamin D is so important because we don't get enough of it from the sunlight today. We're supposed to be able to process on 1 square inch of skin 18 international units of vitamin D. If we don't have vitamin D, we can't absorb calcium. The first thing that happens when we start losing our calcium is the heart is affected. Why? Because it has to steal the calcium from the bones, and the entire body is then affected. So vitamin D, even though people don't talk about it like E and A and lecithin, is a very important one. And you can't synthesize vitamin D2 and stick it in your body because it's a drug and it doesn't work, and there's already statistics to prove that it doesn't work. Dr. Isabel Jennings of the University of Cambridge in England has written a book called Vitamins and Endocrine Metabolism, Springfield, Illinois. She reports in many cases synthetic vitamins are now available, which may be identical with natural occurring substances or only closely related. The close relations, although useful in many ways, pose some problems in which they have only a fraction, whether a large or small, of the biological activity of the natural product. They may substitute for several, but not all, of the functions of their natural counterparts. So it is essential to use extreme care in their use. Okay? Any more need be said on that? It's like Betty Lee always says, well, here's a test tube with a synthetic in it. Let's see the blade of grass. Make one of those. We haven't come close. Now then, chapter 12 goes into regeneration. Born again limbs. And it's going into some DNA and genetic research that's taking place now in life extension. It is possible to understand and regenerate limbs. Matter of fact, sometimes small children will lose part of a finger and it will grow back. We have other bodies of energy that we've got to address and understand. For example, when you chop a lizard's tail off and you take a picture of it with a Korean photography camera, what happens is you can see this phantom tail effect or phantom leaf effect if you destroy a leaf. The lizard hasn't been programmed by society, the mental body of energy, not to be able to grow this limb or organ back. So as a result, grows back a tail. Okay? When we in science, on the orthodoxical level, the front runners in science already know about the etheric body. The etheric body is what holds the glass together. The etheric body is what leaves a glass when someone sings a musical note, making that glass disappear and go away into the ozone. Okay? So when we get into higher body and energy fields, we're going to know about this. Now, the next thing it talks about is cross-linking. Cross-linking is when sulfur-hydrogen bonds, the sulfur-hydro group, in proteins are oxidized. They can react with another sulfur-hydro group in the shape of another protein molecule to form a disulfide. Now, what that means is like you can take a raw, natural, pliable form of rubber and heat it up, and it becomes vulcanized, hard. This is what happens when our bodies are subjected to internal chemicals, junk foods, and then catalyzed by what we call toxic sunlight. Okay? Now, one of the things that Dirk suggests is to deal with the skin problem is to take food FDA dye number 2, red dye number 2. Okay, now that's what he takes. And what happens is it gives you, if you take too much, the book cautions, if you take too much, you're going to have orange skin. And if you want it by prescription, it's called Orthobronze, and you get it up in Canada. So now, the desire of the body to form is to now encapsulate itself in a pretty skin. So we shoot ourselves up with FDA dye number 2. Now you gotta realize we're talking about the number 2 bestseller in the United States right now. And a lot of folks are gonna be doing this. So we're gonna have the plastic group and the living group here. Society is starting to take a division. Now the book talks about para-ammonic benzoic acid, PABA. That's good. That's a very good, that's a V vitamin within a B vitamin. So there's a good and a bad. He's like black and white. I like the book because it's stimulating. It makes you think. You make the wrong move, you're going to be frozen. Now, chapter 7 talks about free radicals. Free radicals, the main cause of them, or the attention of those, was brought to us back during the nuclear reaction days. I used to work at the University of Michigan on nuclear experiments. I know what free radicals are all about. It says that vitamin C and E are good antioxidants. Free radicals can cause blood clots by blocking prostacyclin, cross-linking, pigment accumulation, causes breakdowns in plastic, rubber, petroleum, food, and living tissues. It says take vitamin A, C, E, B1, B5, B6, cysteine, and tyrosine. This is okay. But once again, now be careful when you start taking amino acids en masse. Because the body needs all 8 essential amino acids to digest the one, like if you're taking a blast of phenylalanine, it's going to rob the body, other functions in the body, to make one thing happen. So you got to be careful. It's a short-term effect. But there's a thing, when you go up on drugs, and I've never seen an exception to this, you go down afterwards. It's like skiing, you know. You can ski moderately along, and go up and down, take the hills and the knolls, and keep a moderate pace. Or you can go straight up the side of Mount Everest and straight down the other side. It depends on what your personal path or evolution is all about. Now, the next thing I find extremely fascinating, because what Dirk is doing now he's taking large amounts of DHT and BHA. And what they do is they take a teaspoon of it, they mix it with aerosol-type cooking oils, a whole teaspoon. That's 100 times over what the FDA says is the maximal allowable dosage. And they dump that in their eggs, they dump that in their meat, and they cook it with this, with the BHT. And what happens is it lowers the free radicals, keeps the cholesterol levels down. Okay, now here's what I like to do. Those of you that are not very science or biochemically oriented, let's take BHT and break it down and see what it is, okay? BHT stands for butylated hydroxyl toluene, okay? Now, what this does is, first of all, let's take the word apart and understand it. Butyl means any four univalent radicals. That means that butyl is a source of a chemical that has three electrons that will bond up with peroxides, three radicals, and cause another element to happen, supposedly doing something good for you. Okay? Now let's take butylate. Butylate is to introduce the butyl group into a compound. Okay? Now, hydroxyl, the middle part of the word. Hydroxyl is a univalent group of radical consisting of hydroxides, oxygen, and alcohols, glycols, and phenols, mostly petroleum byproducts. Now, toluene is the last part of BHT. Toluene is a liquid aromatic hydrocarbon, C7H8, which resembles benzene but is less volatile, flammable and toxic. It is produced commercially from light oils, from coke oven gas and coal tar, and from petroleum. It is used as a solvent in organic synthesis and as an anti-knock agent for gasoline. It's great to hold things. And so if you want to become plasticized, and definitely it will freeze for a while the body. But there's something else going on in the body besides this rigidity, this urge and this desire to maintain our looks. And our physical beauty will not be surpassed or conquered by plasticizing yourself. The Egyptians, for example, were heavy into this, but they did it after the person was deceased. They used large amounts of tannic acid, put that in the body, put them inside the pyramid because the pyramid removes all the viruses from the body and let them sit for a long time. This preserved the body for 2,000 or 3,000 or 4,000 years. They figured in the second coming around, they could use these bodies over again.
Well, there's the first part. That's what we're going to do now. Ooh, got that volume up there a little bit. So let's get Dr. Bell back on here and crank him up some more. Dr. Bell, would you crank up, please? We're looking for Dr. Bell here.
Yes, we are. Dr. Fred Bell, please step forward and talk about metaphysics.
We're now going to a little bit of metaphysics now, a little bit. What that represents. Okay, now, we have 7 levels of consciousness. Remember that? We discussed that? Okay, 7 levels of consciousness. Physical plane, astral plane, mental plane, Buddhic plane, ethnic, medanic, and divine plane. Each one has a sub-level. And there's 49 sub-levels. And that's called by the Egyptians a ladder of the soul. Okay? Now, the strange thing about the pyramid and relating to all this in health, one point I want to cover is this. In the Great Pyramid, the King's Chamber, is two-thirds the distance from the ground. It's up about 200 feet high in a 500-foot high structure. Okay? And the perfect temperature for the human body, where you require less sleep, less food, and less air, is 68 degrees. And just so happens that the Great Pyramid in Egypt, in the King's Chamber, even though the outside of that pyramid is changing from zero temperatures to 150 degrees, is always 68 degrees. Very interesting thing to know. Now, the physical plane, this plane right here projected up like that consists of solid, liquid, gas, ionic, third etheric, second etheric, and first etheric. Well, man, in science, you know, supposedly society listens to science, and that tells us where we are, right? But that's not really what's happening. But science, until recently, was looking at cells, could only perceive a cell through the ionic level. And with the invention of the electron microscope, we were able to probe down in areas, and we became aware of these etheric portions of the physical plane. And this, of course, brought man in a series of possibilities that this could, in fact, exist. So you only became recently aware of these things, okay? Now, the ionic is the area of Kerlian photography. So when we take a picture of a Kerlian photograph, we're dealing on the ionic plane. We're looking at the human body discharging water and gas into an electrical medium, which is a camera, and giving us an indication of what's going on the ionic plane. These higher planes, their spiritual worlds do exist on these planes. And these are the particles that the scientists have correlated. In the first etheric, they call that the realm of the electron. The second etheric, the realm of the neutrino. And the third etheric, the realm of the proton. In science, when a person looks at a particle, we have a linear accelerator or an Adams measure, and we'll have a thing called a Wilson cloud chamber. And a scientist will say, this particle, a mu meson or pi meson, only existed for a millionth of a second. That's not true. The particle is existing all the time. Man created an environment in which, through the action of his five senses, he was able to observe it. But through his ignorance, he says it only existed for such a length of time. But what he's really saying is that it's existing all the time, but I'm not smart enough to know that. Okay? This is one of the complexities of the predicaments of society and science. Okay? Now, there are particles existing up on these higher planes. For example, the astral plane, the mental plane, Buddhic plane, ethnic, and so on, have particles, just like we have particles down here. On this plane up in here, the particles down in here are all the units of electrons and so on that we talk about. Now, if we have another microscope, and we look inside, we're going to look inside the actual atom itself, inside of the electron. Now, scientists will say the smallest particle is the electron and the proton. But inside the electron and the proton is another particle, which we call the ANU, ANU. And the energy comes down from the astral plane through the medium of the first etheric through this particle. And then the energy is so dense that it starts reflecting light, and through its reflection of light, it appears to be an electron and proton. And then it appears to combine and do these different things, and so on and so forth, until we have a cell, and down and down and down. That's the way the energy falls down. And the ANU is a high energy source, and it's a doorway. There's positive ANU and there's negative ANU. Now, when you meditate, let's say you meditate, and what you're doing is you're astral traveling, or you're up here having some divine experience with the angels or whatever on one of these higher planes. What is happening is that your brain is opening up, and these particles are filling up your brain inside, and your consciousness is becoming tuned into them. And energy follows thought. Because consciousness is not limited by size. Man and his expression to his fellow man is limited by size, but consciousness is not limited by size. As a matter of fact, if you were to know the size of heaven, it's smaller in its physical location than any atom in your body. So when you were there, you'd swear it's as big as this, because everything is relative to everything else. The speed of light through the physical plane was observed and measured by man to be 186,000 miles per second, or 186,273 miles per second, if you wanted to be precise. And what man was doing was not measuring the speed of light through a medium. Man was measuring his ability to perceive light that was instantaneous through a medium, and NASA proved that to be true with the experiments on the moon with the astronauts. That was called the theory of relativity. Was brought forth into science by Albert Einstein a long time ago. But Albert Einstein realized a few years later, when he expanded himself in consciousness, that the theory of relativity was an incorrect hypothesis, and he proceeded into what is called the unified field theory, meaning that everything is constant and instantaneous and expanding all in synchronization with itself. This violated his theory of relativity, but orthodox science couldn't follow the unified field theory. They could barely understand the theory of relativity. They're just now today becoming aware of what the unified field theory was all about. The pyramid works on the unified field theory. It does not work on the theory of relativity. And its results are always instantaneous. Now, size. When you go into metaphysics, you're going into a world beyond physics. And you don't want to get lost in it. You want to learn to put one foot solidly on the ground and the other foot solidly in the heavens. And you want to center yourself on the ground and bring your head to the heavens. That's what you need to learn to do. And this takes some orientation. First of all, you have to perceive what time is, and you have to perceive what size are. And I'll give you two mental disciplines for that. Size is first. How many of you know about, remember the Alice in Wonderland story? You know, where she jumps into the hole and the whole world changes, right? Alice in Wonderland. That's a psychedelic trip described by a human being on a mushroom trip. Because psychedelic trips on mushrooms are a journey into time and space. And what we do is I will teach people how to understand size first. Let's look at an atom of an orange, one little orange. Okay, an orange is made up of many atoms, but we want to look at one atom. So we immediately reduce it to the two smallest particles, the electron and the proton. Then we want to relate that electron and proton in size to this room so that we can relate to where we are. If we can't, in a correlated way, relate it to where we are now, there's no purpose. So we take an orange and we make it as big as the earth. Okay? And just so happens that the carpet we're standing on is now the orange. That's how big it is. It goes all around the earth. That's how big we expanded it. So that you could probably comprehend in your mind. And this, once it's got yellow skin, there's the particles of the skin, the pits. Okay, now, so I reach down, and one of these little squares is the atom, the electron, the proton, the size. I bring it up. Now I have a size comparison between the electron and the proton. So here I am, I'm holding this atom of the orange, because the orange is as big as the earth, and I'm standing on it. Now, how big are the particles? Well, it appears to me that the particles, the two particles, are the size of this, about a large cherry, but really they're not. As I get my magnifying glass out, I suddenly realize that the proton, which is the nucleus, is the size of a grain of salt, and the electron is invisible, but it's whirling around in this pattern so fast that light is reflecting off of it. But it's very, very, very dense. But it's really not. It's very, very thin. I put my finger in there and not touch anything, but it appears to be solid. This is the trap of Maya. This is the deceptive way of Mother Time deceiving the pilgrim on his way back into the center of that atom, and that size. Inside that proton are these anu. In a hydrogen atom, for example, which is the proton and electron and nothing else, there's 18 of these different anu inside there. Nine of them reflecting nine other ones. Actually, they're divided in series into three, and there's six different series. Okay, so this gives you an idea about size. Now let's talk about time. A person on a psychedelic experience appears to be in another time space. A lot seems to be happening, yet the relative observer thinks that person is moving very slow. A person experiencing a serious accident suddenly is able to see minute by minute their entire life revealed before them, yet it's all happening relative to the observer in a microsecond. See what I mean? Because human consciousness is very fast. Now, going back to size again, imagine that the universe is built just like we are, and that we are inside of a greater being that we could call a god or a deity, and that we are cells inside of his body. And when we're not behaving properly, we're a cancerous cell. When we are behaving, we're a good cell growing. When we produce, have kids, we're making more cells. Just imagine that for a minute. And imagine that the solar system and the sun are part of his chakras. And then imagine, as we look across space, we see these other nebulas, and these are other chakras in other galaxies that are all part of this great being. As we look, we see it takes an awful long time for our sun to go around what's called the central sun, which is Alcyone in the constellation Pleiades. The Tibetans know about this, and they assign these periods as kulpas as this rotation takes place. But in fact, our sun does rotate around that, and it talks about in the book of Job as the secrets of the sweet sisters of the Pleiades. But modern science now recognizes that our sun rotates around a central spiritual sun. Well, if we realize that, then time appears, our relative frame of time appears to be very slow to what's going on here, because we're looking at the insides of a great being. But his time is much, much longer than ours. His day is long. Many, many thousands of days go by for a minute of his time. And that's why it's so hard to understand the universe. But it comes into perspective, and we come into what is called the teachings of the Brahmins. And one day of Brahma, one day of the energy God patterns of Brahma are represented by, which is the secret teachings of the Rishis left in Tibet, is 1 million Earth years. So you begin to see that as greater heights in consciousness are received, we elevate ourselves into these lofty levels. So now you begin to see how time goes. The smarter you get, the more time you have. The person, that's why a person is uptight, running around, jamming into things all the time. You can't learn anything. You begin to see the correlation, because you're learning everything in relative to that person. And that gives you time respects. As you watch life, you suddenly begin to realize, as you reach the head chakras and the head centers, that it's all a divine play. Each person is playing a game. The only thing that changes is the pattern, the people filling the spots. Right now, probably somewhere we're playing King Arthur in relationship. Somebody's playing the king, somebody else is playing the knights. You begin to see all these divine plays coming down, and you suddenly realize this is universal pattern. And you can become a better and better actor. As you become more and more spiritual, you become a better and better actor. And so, therefore, you evolve. In consciousness, for a while, there's some people that use a tarot deck and the Ouija boards. They're playing the part of the magician and the seer. There's other people that do palm readings and things like that. They're all playing cosmic parts. And usually one palm reader will have 50 people coming, and she'll have a sign. She'll say, you're Jesse James in the previous life, and you're so-and-so in the previous life, and you're so-and-so in the previous life. And these people are believing that. And then over here, you got a palm reader with your Jesse James and your King Arthur. So you get 15 palm readers or tarot readers or whatever, and there's 15 different characters. Well, none of them are telling a lie. All of these people are in the vibrations, but some of them are more evolved as Jesse James, and some of them are more evolved as different parts. And so you begin to see this as a divine archetype pattern. Because if God gives you one wish, you become what you want to be in the end. And he grants you that. By serving the race, you get it. If you want to be a King Arthur, then you can bet one day you're going to be a King Arthur. You're going to have your own kingdom, your own castle, and your own knights. And that's going to be your ultimate reality. Maybe when you realize that, you realize something beyond that. But that's the way the universe works. That's the secret of the tarot deck. A tarot reader will have these cards. Each card represents a key archetype or hierophantic type. And when a person spontaneously opens the deck of tarot and pulls out the card, that's the vibration pattern that they're always falling in. You also can call it divining. When you reach a certain level of consciousness, what you can do is you can walk up to a book. I think you can take this book right down here, which is called Discipleship. Any book, it doesn't matter. And I can take this book, and I can divine it right now, and I will open this book spontaneously, and I'll read something out that relates to today's experience. I don't even know where it is. It doesn't matter. I just reach in, open it up to a page, and I come to something. Okay? Page is 215. Well, 215 is an 8. My number is an 8. I was born on August 10th, 1943. I'm a 888. So automatically, I spontaneously open it up to my number, so I know what's right on. I looked at what the contents. It says a life which it says right here, a life which ignores opportunities for expression and learning, the control of personality situation, is a life squandered. That's one of the things we were talking about today. Comes right in. The cultural heritage that is ignored through sheer inertia, the dharma that is retreated from, the failure to intervene on the side of good and merit, the wasted hours before the television, the overoccupation with self-interest, the attachments to material security, all these collectively or individually borrow the neophyte from personality integration, which is the topic of today. That's the way it works. It always works. Okay? When you're doing the right thing, it always works. That begins to teach you that the way to the true life is being spontaneous. And I run Paradigm totally spontaneously. And it totally freaks out anybody that could be an investor in this company because they can't relate to that. But it also freaks them out because the company is one of the most successful companies in the world right now. And it's getting more powerful every day because it's divine. God force runs through me and through you. That's the way you live. Okay? So this gives you an idea of how energy flows. Energy always follows thought. Thought realizes an idea. Idea expresses itself. And experience is realized. Wisdom is achieved from the experience. And you're continually evolving forward, always. Now I'll show you a little bit more about being new here. Now here's the Anu. The Anu adopts patterns which reflect their vibration and movement as they are held in dynamic equilibrium. That means that they're held moving actively by forces emerging from higher dimensions, astral plane, which pass through the Anu and elements through a vortex in the north pole of each Anu. Well, look at that. Another comparison. I have a north and a south pole, third ventricle, and the coccyx. The earth has a north and south pole, and each one of these things is polarized. So that begins to teach us about direction. In space, when you fly through space in a space capsule, there's only one direction. There's out. There's no north or south. But in the universe, everything is polarized and magnetized along similar lines. When you do astral travel, like I learned how to do astral travel to go to the Great Pyramid, it's very easy to do. All you have to do is realize a magnetic path. And when you realize the Great Pyramid is from where we're standing now, straight in that direction, 16,000 miles, and if there's a corkscrew effect going through the magnetism, all you have to do is put yourself in that corkscrew and it'll carry you right straight across. And you actually materialize inside the pyramid. These are the ways that the astral travelers learn to travel, by the magnetic currents. That's why when flying saucers are seen coming down, they always flow along the magnetic meridians of the planet. Because magnetism and electricity are related. And I'm a body of magnetism because I'm in a physical form. Now, if I leave this body and go off on an astral plane, take an astral body, I'm still going to be affected by magnetism, but not to the degree that I am now. So I go with the effect that I'm presenting to myself at this given time. So it's different forms of travel. Okay? Next. Now, here's the astral plane. Astral plane, here's the Anu coming down. And what does it form? It forms millions of molecular structures, and it forms a curtain. And this curtain is the illusion that we're in right now. There's the moon and there's the earth. It's all an illusion, because inside that are other things. It goes on and on and on and on. The universe is infinite, and it's infinite in every aspect. And it's really neat when you start really understanding that, you realize how unimportant that we really are, and yet at the same time we're masters of the area that we're unimportant in. We started going a step further with occult observation. Here is the new pattern coming down. This is one anew. It groups up with three more. It groups up with three more until you get an actual solid particle. I know it's a little blurry. In science, hydrogen has an atomic number of one, okay? And that atomic number can be divided into the atomic number of any other element, and it always comes up with the atomic weight. Well, we found that if hydrogen had 18 different anews in it, and let's say carbon had 216 anews in it, then why couldn't we use the same formula for orthodox science for this metaphysical science to come up with the same results? So we divide 18, which was our cosmic one, into what carbon is, 216, you come out 11.91 atomic weight. So we were able to take this and verify orthodox science. There was no conflict between the anew orthodox science. The numbers blended perfectly, giving us confirmation. This work on these atomic new numbers was done by Alec, Annie Besant, and Charles Ledbetter at the turn of the century.
Now the anew, backing up for a second, the anew is right here, has a field around it just like that. So the atom has a field around it, a human being has a field around, the earth has a field around. So you begin to see the microcosmic, macrocosmic aspect of the entire universe as being one and the same. Everything is the same. It's just the same thing, larger or smaller, going down to an infinite size beyond which you could conceive in consciousness. They're going to a large size, the size of many universes which you couldn't see. And man is just nothing more than energy moving back and forth through the small and the large. All of the heaven worlds that you perceive are smaller than the smallest atom existing well inside the heart chakra. And that's what holds the soul to the personality of the physical vehicle. When the soul gives up, one atom changes in the heart and you come out of your body. Now consciousness is evolving. Now how many of you, let me give you some examples here. How many of you are familiar with a little bit about reincarnation? If you study that at all? But you're a little bit into it. Okay? If you study reincarnation, it explains genius. Because if you look at the ego, the human ego, as a formation of limitation built upon many lifetimes of experience, contained within one energy body, the causal body, you begin to see what the ego represents. This is why some people have a stronger confidence in going into an unknown experience than others. Two people are facing the same experience, one with a heavy ego just goes right on into it, where the other one might be hesitant. The person with a high ego obviously has some past experience. This explains genius. This explains why one child at 6 years old is able to do many things, play music, do science, where another child at 6 years old can't do as much. Because if you were to say that, you know, one can do more than the other without understanding that one has experienced more than the other, hence an older or younger soul, then you have to say you have an unfair God that creates people better than others. But if you understand that reincarnation is a way of explaining experience, then you begin to see how genius, in fact, does come to be with nothing more than a more experienced person. An example of feelings. When Christ talked about life more abundant, let me tell you a little story. I'm going to give you three universal incidents to back it up. Number one, in Europe, when you study culture, we begin to study our past. In Europe, one family would live in a castle from 500 to 1,000 years. Okay? And during that time, many governments, many monarchies, many hierarchies would change. Yet one family, continually, one family name, stayed and built a huge castle. There had to be something that pulled energy back. And that father's spirit had to keep coming to that family, back into that castle, to maintain that feeling over the passage of tremendous years. Today, in Tibet, which has been a custom in Tibet as a nation, I know you've all studied probably Hunza land, how they live so long, in Peru, how they live so long. In Tibet, they have a very simple custom in almost all the monasteries, or the upper monastery. And that custom is when the abbot, or the head lama, gets old, the Dalai Lama gets 80, 90 years old, he says to his monk, I'm going to leave my body now. And he says, look for me in that village, or that village, in 4 or 5 years. So what they do over there, and this is just as common in Tibet as the Catholic and the Jewish religions or the Mormons are here, you know, it's considered Orthodox, which is the Tibetan Orthodox. The monk or the abbot leaves his body, and then the monks have a procession. They go out of the monastery 4 to 5 years down to the village where they were. Their master told them they'd be, and they start asking the villagers, you have a crazy kid around here. We're looking for some high energy child. And the people in the village say, yes, this fitness dwelling has this child in it. So then the monks go to the child, 4 or 5 years old now. You know, the genius and energy starts to show, at least by that time. And out comes the basket of the, you know, some of the possessions or belongings of the previous lama. The child says, oh, that was my teacup. This is what starts to describe the saucer that isn't presented. It's in that cabinet. This is the color of the wall behind it. They had a big ceremony. And then back goes the child to the monastery. And the Americans go and visit. And they see a 7 or 9 year old kid bopping the 60-70 year old men around. And that's the way it works in Tibet. So that gives you an idea of one nation that they don't know any better, so they live with Dr. Reincarnation. One nation. And that's Tibet.